that prevents access to health care on the basis of sex, then the ERA would stand in the way of that. I think the exact permutations of how that works is something that's going to be resolved by courts, probably over many years. But remember, the fact that this is going to be in the courts is not a surprise. All the constitutional provisions are in the courts. And we have ongoing litigation and court decisions interpreting amendments. That's why we have the Constitution is something you can put in your pocket, unlike the U.S. Code, which requires a whole room of books to capture. So the principles in the Constitution are designed to be high level. They're designed to be principles that are interpreted by courts. But certainly, we believe that reproductive health care is an important aspect of equality, and the ERA would help to shore that up.
And finally, Zakiya Thomas, what is your sense, especially among younger women, of their awareness of what's going on right now around the ERA? 2026 is the 250th anniversary of the U.S. Constitution, which is the government is planning to mark with major events. What would it mean if the ERA were the law of the land and in the Constitution?
Well, imagine a world or a country in which women and men were paid equally for the work that they're done, that they do. Imagine a country in which LGBTQ plus individuals were actually protected against discrimination because of who they are. And, you know, imagine a world where we can all be sure that we have equality and that our rights will not be infringed upon because someone thinks that we're different. And that's the foundation and the principle, really, that, that Linda was talking about, that the Equal Rights Amendment provides. And we see overwhelming support in this.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Hello, my name is Jeff, and I am the host of the KBOO show, A Matter of Public Records. Mark E. Smith, singer and driving force of the band The Fall, was born on March 5, 1957, and I have put together a special show to celebrate. It will feature music by The Fall, some spoken word pieces by Mark E. Smith, music that influenced The Fall, and bands that were inspired by The Fall. You can hear the show on March 6th, starting at midnight, exclusively on KBOO, as part of our All Thrills, No Frills winter membership drive. Please consider making a donation today. Thank you.
KBOO is hiring a full-time web coordinator. The web coordinator maintains the front end of KBOO's website, promotes episodes, does copy editing, and helps train staff and volunteers on various website features. For the full job description and instructions for applying, please go to our website at kboo.fm/webhire23. Applications are due at midnight on Thursday, March 9th. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer.
Good morning. You're listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO.fm. Today is Monday, the 27th of February. And excuse me for that beginning. It sounded as if our intro music was coming in ever so slowly. So
yeah, just like I feel. I was laughing because I thought, oh my God, it captured my energy level. That's how I feel. Well, good morning, people. How are you?
I am fantastic. And you are listening to Cecil and Celeste. And we are broadcasting on KBOO 90.7, Portland 91.9, Hood River 104.3, and Corvallis. And
everywhere else, it's on the web at www.kboo.fm. And as you heard in the announcement right before we started, We're in the midst of our winter drive. It's all frills, no frills. And we encourage you to become a member. Now, I'm sure a lot of you are already members. Your duty then, if you are not in a position to increase your support, is to get friends and family involved, because new listeners are just as important to us in our financial quest for stability as our golden listeners. And then for those who have not yet become a member or not yet financial supporters, you can do so by going to KBOO.FM and click on that button that says donate, or you can text the letters KBOO to the digit 44321 and make your pledge. How much? Start with a fraction or the entire amount of an hour of your wages as a guide for how to determine how to support your beloved KBOO Fortnite.
Excellent. And today, we hoping to engage you in some meaningful conversation as we talk about our society and how we live and how we create community that we hope is safe for all.
Oh, those are some words right there. Thanks. What is safety? Well, here's an opportunity for KBOO to earn its keep, so to speak, because Cecil and I will discuss some upcoming dynamics here in the city that affect that concept of safety. Shall I just launch?
Yeah.
Okay,
let's
here we
begin.
Go. Okay, so for those of you who have been following the news, you know that the city of Portland is considering a pilot program and has opened up a request for proposal, also known as RFP process, whereby businesses who specialize in the area of surveillance called gunshot detection will apply to be chosen, receive grant money to demonstrate a pilot program that, in the hopes that it will reduce the effects of gun violence in the city of Portland. Okay? Now, gunshot detection technology sounds really mysterious and probably hard to define, but it's not, and I'll just try to break it down really quickly. What gunshot detection is it's either an acoustic sensor system, or it is very basically something like a microphone. There are two or three different proprietary systems, but basically it is an acoustic sensor system. That means it's a sensor that can pick up sound or sound waves. And then there's also a software algorithm that is designed and intended to detect and notify people who monitor this wave of firearm discharges. Most of these systems are installed outside. Certain types of the technology are mounted on streetlights or elevated structures and are microphones. Not all of them, but some of them are microphones. Usually you'll find anywhere from 20 to 25 of these microphones installed in roughly a square mile area. Whenever these systems are triggered, then the people who monitor it let the city's emergency dispatchers know where it's occurred. They give what is called a geolocation, you know, longitude, latitude of the area. And so somebody in public safety can be sent to this area, okay? Then the idea is that some type of public safety staff will be able to get there and render assistance or whatever. People who want this system believe that this helps support the police. It gives them increased awareness of what's going on in the area. Some people who want this feel that it leads to faster and more reliable responses than 911. Slipped out there for a minute. And then some of them say that it's a really accurate technology, and that some of the people who want this will claim that most people don't call in and report what they think got shot. So this helps locate them really quickly. Okay, people who are critical of this technology, they don't believe that these technologies are that efficient. And to be honest, nobody has ever opened up the technology so it can be ascertained by a third party whether or not it is actually accurate. There have been organizations that, like the MacArthur Justice Center and Chicago Inspector General, found that a large amount of their dispatches were not related to gun crime. Okay, and that a large amount, and when I say large amount, I'm talking about 89% for no gun related and 86% in no crime. And this, again, is the MacArthur Justice Center and Chicago, City of Chicago, the Inspector General. And they've sent false alarms. So it's also considered very expensive. And it also can increase racial profiling and over-policing in neighborhoods. And there are also concerns of privacy. So we look at this and we think, okay, is this a good fit for Portland? Well, one of the challenges Cecil and I have had in our conversations is that we feel that perhaps there's been some, bad framing of this. And by bad framing, here's what you hear often. Well, we need to do something because gun crime is on the increase. And if you don't want this, then you're soft on crime. You're okay. And another argument you may hear is that this is the solution or the best solution for gun crime, gun violence. Another argument is that it works. Another argument is that it is an effective deterrent. Actually, it makes us safer. So we feel that that's not the way this debate, this discussion should be framed, and that the actual questions are a lot deeper than that, which is surveillance actually making us safer? If you accept the idea that surveillance makes us safer, how does it actually make us safer? Are there other answers or solutions to gun violence that we're not looking at because focus is being drawn away from them, and we're relying on this technology instead of a combination of solutions? So that's where we are.
We will propose a couple of questions in seeking your response, but also, Celeste, we also want to call attention to a town hall hearing about this, correct? Tell us
yes,
about
indeed.
That.
Yes, indeed. Okay. So the City of Portland, has an RFP process. What we're doing is putting together a forum. Actually, it's already been put together. There's a forum, and at this forum that will be held through the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing, folks will get a chance to hear from people who are discussing this software and what can be done. They want your input. Let's just sum it up that way by saying they want your input, and it's really important that your voice is heard. So the town hall takes place on March 1st. It takes place at 6 p.m., and it's online. You can go to www.portland.gov/PCCEP. And then you can take place in a virtual town hall meeting. So again, March 1st, 6 p.m., go to the website www.portland.gov/PCCEP, and there you can find information for the link and get involved. There will be ASL and Spanish interpretation provided, and if you're interested in any other kind of service, there are ways to connect and request that kind of service. So this is kind of to get people hopefully involved and willing and able to participate in this, because this will determine how safe your community is or will it. What it will do is we'll get your input. What we want to do here on More Talk Radio on your community connection is to help frame it so that the argument actually makes sense, and it actually addresses the whole idea of safety from a more critical aspect.
And so the questions we are asking you to respond to are, Celeste, you want to share?
Well, here's the thing. Does, when surveillance, well, let me put it this way. Does surveillance actually make us safer? And if you accept that premise, how does it make us safer? Give us your thoughts. I mean, what exactly does it do to lower gun violence, surveillance? We've all had questions on many other types of surveillance. And in its basic form, gunshot detection technology is surveillance. You're monitoring activities in an area. Our phone number is 503-231-8187. So as we're getting kind of started here, a lot of people in the community don't really hear a lot about the concerns because of the way this argument is framed. And so it's framed in a real simplistic term. It's like you either want it or you don't want it. And if you want it, you want a safer neighborhood. If you don't want it, well, you're soft on crime. And when it comes to that kind of framing and safety, I think it kind of ignores some really critical points about what livability is supposed to be in a community. What do you think, people?
We've raised a couple of questions about livability and about safety, and as you reminded us, there have been ongoing conversations about surveillance generally and whether or not we want to live in a society where we are every move is being watched. And, you know, we've experienced that in everything we do, from, you know, the websites you visit to the your interaction with your mobile device, to walking down the street and knowing that there are cameras on you. So in some case, we are already living in a society where every move is detected. Given that reality, what does this proposal or gunshot detection technology mean? How is it either helpful or not helpful? Is it a means by which, I believe the advocates say, it's a way in which our community becomes safer by allowing, I wouldn't say police or other responding agencies to know when and where gunshots are detected so that police and or ambulance services can be sent to that place. And as you suggested, Celeste, that in some places where they have this technology, where there have been some examination, it is either not as effective in either detecting whether or not gunshots have been discharged, and or whether or not it create a sense of safety for the community. And I think safety is somewhat is a relative term, but also it means in part how do we feel about our society, about our community. Are we comfortable living in the world where we are everything we do is watched, and or whether or not we are comfortable with whether or not this proposed technology is effective. And as Celeste asked us, does surveillance make us safer? And if it does, how does it? And it's something you pointed out, Celeste, was that this technology is not something that prevents gunshots or discharge of weapons. It's something that happens in the best world. We discover it after the fact. So after the fact, knowing that it happened, does that make us safer?
You know, there's so many dynamics to go into it. One of the basic dynamics is that if we rely on surveillance technology and put this much money into it, and bear in mind, you know, any society has a finite amount of money to spend on its needs. Are we spending money on other aspects of crime prevention? There is a very human element to it. There's the fact that you got to meet people's needs. So if you have people, and not everybody commits crime to be violent. There are criminal aspects, let's not forget that. But sometimes people are using guns because they are hungry or drug affected. So how do we address that human need? And I believe it should be more than one response rather than to focus on a single response. But we want your call, 503-231-8187, and let's go to our caller.
Russell.
Oh. Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm on a ferry from Port, I'm just moved coming into Edmonds. I'm in Washington State. Quick question. Has anybody examined what this technology can do other than just detecting gunshots? Because surveillance is tricky because it says it will look for one thing, but it can pull in all kinds of data that is unbeknownst to us. That's my question.
Mm-hmm. Well, depending on what style of acoustic sensors that they use, if it's a microphone, it can pull in conversation. But I'm answering questions. Here's the thing about it: if you keep up with surveillance, you know that you can have a camera, but if you wanted to use it to prove a crime was committed, you cannot submit the sound. But these things record sound, and a lot of people don't know that.
Oh, okay. Well, that was just my thought. I'm getting off the boat at the moment, but okay. I'm in a Washington State resident, but I do support KBOO. So thank you.
Hey, thank you so much, Russell, and have a great day. Something that Russell asked raised a question for me, and I would like your response, Les, since you've studied this in some detail. It's my understanding that sometimes, and I'm not sure which technology of gunshot surveillance or technology is used, but sometimes they misunderstand or say something is a gunshot that isn't a gunshot.
Yes, that does happen. I mean, just plain and simple, yes, it does happen. And, you know, one of the challenges that happen is that you get public safety officials, you get police there, and there's no crime, there's no injury, and that meant that somebody who is suffering has been missed because we have, again, a finite amount of resources. And so I guess the question would be, if you were looking at this and trying to assess it, it's not just how much does it cost, but how much does it cost when there are other calls being missed and staffing levels are really low?
Okay.
Somebody's not going to get served.
Questions that we hope that if you're able to attend the town hall meeting to raise some of these questions. Our number's here, 503-231-8187. And let's go to Harry. Good morning, Harry.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I have a few questions. The first question is, this is a proposal. How much is the price tag? How much does this cost?
Well, it depends.
Install it into for the city.
It depends on which of the technologies you have, and so when the request for a proposal, let me see if I can find out exactly how much money the city is offering. But depending on how many neighborhoods you want to put it in, it costs more. So what is really going to determine how much it costs is how many neighborhoods does the city want to put it in. And any smart steward is going to say, well, just put it in the ones where we think there's going to be the most gun crime. And that changes the equation suddenly, because you're not going to want it in every neighborhood. You're just going to want it in certain neighborhoods. Mm. So that's one of the big things that's going to determine how much eventually costs. I do know that, let me see, where is that report? Okay, so OPB and the ACLU concluded that the high cost of this installation and service is not worth the benefit given the concerns about inaccuracy. $65,000 to $90,000 per square mile plus $10,000 square mile service initiation fee is what it costs San Antonio, Atlanta, and Dayton, or thereabouts. And these three cities ended up ending that service. They end up ending working. And this was specifically with one company, though.
Oh.
So okay. It's pretty spending.
Yeah, definitely. My next question is, I live out here in outer southeast Portland, also called the Numbers. We have a lot of fireworks that go off. I remember the 4th of July, Christmas, and New Year's, this place is lit up with fireworks. Obviously, they'll detect that, but that will cause an issue because there's also cars backfiring and construction noise and all these things that can thwart this monitoring system.
Yes, that's true. And even though some of these companies claim a real high level, like 97-98% accuracy, that's never been tested by a third-party independent monitor. So I just told you three cities that terminated their contract because it was not worth it. So that meant
it must not have been that accurate.
Okay. Hey, thank you so much, Harry. We have another caller.
Okay,
like
hey,
to
have
to.
A nice day.
Okay, thank you so mm-hmm. much. You're listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO FM. Give us a call at 503-231-8187, and we will go to James. Good morning, James.
Good morning.
Good morning. As long as control of the means of production are in the hands of oligarchs, any surveillance program implemented will be a tool of the oligarchs.
Yes.
It should be the people should own the means of production. The people should be in charge. We need to put the people in charge first before we start doing anything like that.
That's true.
Hey, thank you so much. James, I have a question for you. How might we put... I think those who are advocating for this, saying that the people via the city government are in charge, and so we the people, the government, are doing this. How do you respond to that? That is not the... We are not in control, but rather the oligarchs.
Well,
I mean, the people elect the city council.
Well, they are either lying or they are in denial, because if control of the means of production is in the hands of a small minority group of oligarchs, then they're in charge, and for the people to own the means of production, the people have to have control of tax and regulatory policy through local governments, not through national governments.
We're talking about a local government issue. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but the state oligarchs own the state, what was once our federal government, and now the people are the property of the state.
Okay, well, thank you for that insight.
And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO FM, on numbers here 503-231-8187, and on this Monday, the 27th of February, we are talking about gun detection technology and the proposal that City of Portland is examining about whether or not to subscribe or begin using this technology. And Celeste, you mentioned a few cities which have had problems with, I think you said, one company and their technology. Is this gunshot detection technology used by any municipality in our region that you're aware of?
I could look that up. That is not something I have sitting right in front of me, so I can try to answer that. But I know that there are organizations, other cities that have tried it, because even though I mentioned San Antonio and Atlanta and Dayton, as I said, Chicago also is one. It's not that they're necessarily close to us, mm-hmm. but I'll see if I can find something and look for a comparable city.
And
that's something that people might ask tonight on March 1st. At the gunshot detection technology town hall,
and you mentioned earlier that there are more than one company that offers these services, and so there will be a RFP that is coming down, and then what are there? Well, we don't. I suppose we don't know how many, well, maybe we do know how many companies will apply for this. But are there, do you know of the differences in the technologies of the different companies?
I do, but it's better than listening to me talk about it. It would be better for people to come to that town hall and hear about it.
And when is that town hall meeting?
That town hall takes place on March 1st at 6 p.m. It is a virtual meeting, and the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing is holding a virtual town hall on gunshot detection systems. And one of them that has been prominent in Portland area news is ShotSpotter. And that includes ShotSpotter. People will be talking about that. This committee wants to hear from the Portland community. To find out more information, go to www.portland.gov/P as in Paul, C as in Charlie, EP, PISA. And full disclosure, I am on that committee. And so I really want to encourage people to come, questions, listen, give your concerns voice. If you are in favor, if you're not in favor, if you're on the fence, it's really important that we hear from folks and get an idea of where we think energy and information and money needs to go to help address our concerns over gun crime and gun violence.
I have a couple of questions as we wait for some more callers at 503-231-8187. I think one of our early callers, or maybe you referenced that this technology will be placed in certain neighborhoods. So I imagine neighborhoods where so-called there are increased level of gun violence. And so I'm wondering whether or not this, and again, going back to this increased surveillance, there's something about me saying, well, again, this is a continuation of the, not only increased surveillance, but increased policing of neighborhoods, and whether or not that is something good or not. What does it say for a neighborhood, not only that you have more police in the neighborhood, and does that make you safe, or do we feel safer with this technology? I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. The whole idea of safety really needs to be talked about so that we are using a common language. We mean the same thing when we say it. One of the problems with the idea of safety is that, and I used to do, I used to work for the city in crime prevention. And one of the things I would tell people that would shock them until I explained it is that safety is an illusion. What it is relative low risk. Making sure that you were not advertising vulnerability. And then what is safe for one person may not be another person's idea of safety. So for some people, for example, they consider themselves safe if they scurry into their house and they don't engage too much in public and divulge anything about their personal business, and that they have certain kinds of locks and chains on the door. Now, that is an extreme end of the spectrum, and I'm just doing it for comparison's sake. Okay, another person's idea of safety is to engage with people, know who's around them, talk to people so that when they see certain behaviors in their neighborhood, they can say, hey, wait a minute now, this doesn't look like it's good for us. And they either know the people who are doing it or are familiar enough with the people that are doing it that they can either
engage with those folks, talk to them, or if they do call public safety, they can describe exactly what is the problem and not make generalizations. Why this is important is that people think, well, if you have people doing things that is unsafe, that should be all I need to say. But what is unsafe? Sometimes unsafe or your idea of unsafe is nothing more than you criminalizing normal behaviors of people. Right. Some people talk loud. Yes. If you hear a loud voice, are you in trouble?
Right, right.
It might be just kids having fun.
Sure, certainly. And so we're also talking about cultural norms and ways in which peoples and communities interact with one another and whether or not one is aware of what is considered behavior that is acceptable. One caller also mentioned that he lives in the neighborhood, and I think many of us experience this, where there are fireworks. And I suppose that some of these companies have examined this so that their technology is able to differentiate between fireworks and a round going off from a gun. Is that correct?
Well, here's the thing. There's been no, you know how we rely on organizations like Consumer Reports and what have you? There is no consumer report to indicate that this technology of any iteration is as effective as the sellers claim.
Well, and that makes me wonder. It's sort of like in communities that are over policed, do we need anything else to bring more police into a community because they believe that, you know, someone's shooting a gun when it may not be, and in a society where people are picked up because they either look different or acting differently, not because of any harm that they are engaging in for themselves or to others, there's a danger of over-policing again. And again, to go back to your philosophical question about what is safe, some people may not feel safe with when their community is surrounded by armed police.
Armed forces. Well, you know, and I do have concerns about gun violence and gun crime. I've been shot at. I've had guns pulled on me and literally stuck into my body, you know, threatening me with harm, with death. Okay, let me just be real. You know, and so I do understand people's concerns. But my question then is, again, if this is a technology that monitors and reports after the fact, if there are no indicators that it is effective, how exactly is it making us safer? Well, and what I'm saying is not just ignore it, but do something else. We need, and there's never in human issues, there is never a one solution for everything, you know, that we do.
And this reminds me about, because it is after the fact, you know, ideally. Mm-hmm. We hear gunshots, and so therefore we respond. It makes me think that we are continuing down that road where if it is after the fact, I'm reminded of a Hollywood movie a few years ago where there is this technology where they can predict who will commit crime.
Oh, Minority Report.
Well, I didn't know. So is that...
Well, here's the thing about surveillance. Not only does it not necessarily make you safe, not only does it possibly divert or dilute a needed response somewhere else, but it causes siege mentality.
Yes.
And that's been documented, and that makes people who live in the area feel paranoid unless able to engage with each other. And we need a combination of things. You know, yes, we need protection from criminals who are abusing or preying on folks, but we also need to look at the different levels of issues, like I said, that cause gun violence. And we are smart. We tell people, okay, if you commit a crime and you use a toy gun, that's one thing. But if you use a real gun in the commission of crime, even if you are not the one holding the gun, but you're there with the phone, it's a different sentencing. And we look at that and we say, you don't walk into an event with a weapon that is guaranteed to create death and act like you didn't know it could hurt somebody. So we try to have, what are they called, tiered or graduated or spectrums of response. And if we're going to have spectrums of response, shouldn't we also think about, well, let's see, does this person need mental health help? Do they need help getting food? Do they need clothes? What is it they do? Do they need help for getting off of substance abuse? You know, there's a number of things. You'll hear people say, well, I used the gun to go rob this store because my kids needed milk and Pampers. And sometimes that's actually true. But that's not, you know, that's not, that should not use a one size fits all solution. There should be when I was a nurse, we used to call it a care plan. We looked at every aspect of the problem, and then we devised a solution for every aspect of what the person was going through.
Certainly. And to go back to our original question about this technology, it happens after the fact. So it doesn't address those issues that you laid out for us. But it's after the fact that a gunshot has been detected, there's a response. Now, whether it's effective or not, that's part of the ongoing conversation. But I hear a question
in what you're saying. Actually, I hear two questions, and one of them being, so what does after the fact do to stop gunshots?
Right.
How does it deter? Well, we don't know that it does.
Right. But let's go.
It's been posed as a solution. Go ahead.
Let's go to Francis and see what Francis has to say about this.
Hi. I just tuned in, and it sounds like you're talking about the gunshot monitor thing that... Do you know that if it picks up other sounds besides gunshots?
Besides, there's
in addition to gunshots,
one type of there's a couple of different types of technology. They pick up, one of them picks up everything, including voices. One of them says that it is more effective, and it picks up wave patterns that are more precise. So, but the problem is that you can have a sound that sounds just like a gunshot. It's at the same decibel range, right. You know, all of that, and doesn't really. So we don't know.
When I hear a gunshot, I hear a gunshot without any monitoring necessary. So this is for someone like an officer that's cross town or something, or what? Is it going to be just in certain areas, or what are they? I don't understand why they need this.
Yeah.
We do have a gunshot detection technology. It's called 911, and when people hear, they call.
And having lived in a neighborhood that was gentrified over in Northeast Portland for years, and seeing how our neighborhood was targeted and criminalized and everything else, and people moving in calling themselves new pioneers who called the police on everything and anything, I really don't think this is something that we need in a community, but that's just my opinion.
Let me ask you a different question, Francis, because you hit one of the nails on the head. Give me one other solution you think would be helpful when we're trying to address gun violence. What else should we be doing?
Well, one thing, we don't need to have semi-automatic weapons on the street at all, number one. For what? To kill somebody? We don't need those guns on the street.
Another thing, now,
as a person who's known a lot of people who've been in prison and elsewhere, kindness is a kind of a nice thing, but that's too simple, apparently, for people to do, to be able to just, as they say now, it's a trending thing to say lead with love, but it could be nice if that was a permanent situation. But, you know, there are reasons why people shoot guns, and some of them are because of their mental health, and others are rage or whatever, but or stealing. I just think that this approach just would exacerbate everything and not make it any better at all.
Mm, thank you.
Thank you.
You guys take care.
You too. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Francis. And yeah, whether it exasperates the situation, whether it solves it, you know, there have been too many incidents where police have come into a situation because of the fear that, because of the thought that something is happening. So they come with their prepared to return fire or to shoot. And whether or not that's a whole other philosophical question of whether or not that's effective or not. What mm-hmm. happens on, say, as one of our earlier callers said, on the 4th of July or on New Year's Eve, where you hear lots of fireworks and people shooting off guns. Boy, I can imagine, and not only the way things are now with 911 and people calling in saying, I hear gunshots. Now when you have all these things going off all over the city on New Year's Eve and the 4th of July, gosh.
Well, my main thing, though, is I want people to consider this, is to look at how the question of gunshot detection is framed. If you don't want that, it does not mean you were soft on crime, okay? If you don't want that, it doesn't mean do nothing. If you do want it, it doesn't solve the problem because it happens after it's over and there is no effective documentation or research done to prove that it is an effective deterrent. So the question is like, if you want this technology, how exactly does it make you safer? Those are the kind of ways to think of it. You know, what are the other costs of this? Are there other ways to address it that we are ignoring because we have one solution being put in our faces and that's all we see? And I just want to encourage people to do a critical analysis or a cost-benefit analysis, but do an analysis of what you're being told in terms of what makes you safe. You know, people can say, well, I don't want a whole bunch of people who look like that in my neighborhood coming and doing something. And I don't want people who look like they might be poor coming in my neighborhood. You don't want people who are rich coming in your neighborhood and causing you harm either. So the thing is, we got to be really discriminating and be very discerning about how we look at solutions for crime and look at a real, well-rounded solution.
Well, in that, let me ask you a couple of questions in the few minutes we have left. Could you mm-hmm. say something about the origins of this? Not the origins of this technology, but the origins of why this is a conversation in our city at this time. And do we have any idea yet in terms of the cost? And who is the city commissioner, the mayor advocating this? Are there so those are just a few questions I have.
Well, I want to be careful in how I frame this because, as certainly. I said, I am on this committee.
All right.
And I want, what I'm trying to do is get people to have a critical analysis of why they are taking a position or another. I can't really tell you why this technology is, it comes out like it is. I mean, cities have tried it and they've decided, no, it's not going to work for them. Seattle, I did research while we were talking, is one of the nearby cities that considered it, and it was part of the mayor's public safety push, you know. But as of November 30th of 2022, they decided they didn't want it, yeah. You know. So there are reasons why it's not considered effective. It's probably a technology that somebody thought would be a good idea, and they decided to market it this way when it may have limited application for public safety. And one of the reasons I can say that is I spent over 20 years in public safety. That was part of my job, you know, to know these kind of things, to look at this kind of information, to sift through it and discern it and then turn around and share it with the public. You know, that I was a public safety liaison, you know, and this is what I did for a living. And I don't claim to know everything, but I will tell people this is how you do your research. But one of the things I want to do, you know, in lieu of me answering those questions, is encourage people to come to the town hall. The town hall will be held on March 1st. That's a Wednesday. March 1st, it starts at 6 p.m. And the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing is having this town hall. It's a virtual event. You can participate. Go to www.portland.gov/PCCEP and you can get all the information you need to participate. Okay?
So do you, I'm reading a flyer right now. Do you have to sign up to testify or how does this work?
Well, it's not so much testifying. As a town hall functions, there's usually a facilitator that's going. I'm going to say a little bit about what gunshot detection technology is, an abbreviated version of what I said earlier in the show. And then there will be facilitators to help people ask their questions.
Okay.
Because there's going to be a couple of questions that will be asked, and the expectation is that people share their idea, their thought, their concern.
Okay.
And it's kind of like a data grab. We want to hear your voice.
So people will all have the opportunity to share and engage.
Well, as many as we can in the time. I think it's a 2-hour meeting.
Right. Well, let's see. Yeah. We have a couple of minutes left, and April's on the phone right now. Good morning, April. Yes.
Hi, I just have a quick question. So I have been listening to this and the other shows you've done on ShotSpotter and the other technologies that are similar, and I really appreciate that you're doing this. However, I'm wondering, I cannot attend the town hall in person, and I don't have a computer or a cell phone, and I'm wondering if there's a way for people to submit testimony by letter?
That is a good question. Let me see. What I can do is send you to that www.portland.gov.pcep.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have a computer.
Said that. I just realized that. You know what? Here's what I would suggest. This is the low-tech answer I had, and bear in mind it's off the top of my head. I'm sorry, I should have known this, but if you dial 503-823-4000. That's 503-823-4000. Tell them you want to be able to send some information to the city about gunshot detection technology.
Okay.
They should be able to help you get information on how to do that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank
you,
April.
You're very welcome.
Appreciate it.
Sure. Okay, Celeste. Again, the day after tomorrow, we are being invited to an exciting, at least important event. And it's important because it will impact all of us.
It will impact all of us financially and socially and in terms of public safety and then people just getting their basic needs met. Because, again, we got a finite amount of money. So it's March 1st,
What time is it, Cecil?
6 o'clock.
Okay. And you can attend by going to www.portland.gov/P as in Paul, C as in Charlie, EP. Peace out. And come, have your voice be heard. And speaking of your voice being heard, we want to thank everybody who continues to let KBOO's voice be heard by supporting us. We're in the middle of our All Frills, No Frills drive. We're looking to raise $17,000. You can help us. Do your part by going to www.kboo.fm and click on Donate and Give, or text KBOO to 44321 and follow directions on how to support us.
Well, thank
go
you.
To our website and look at the programming, too. We've got lots of specials that are all thrills for you.
And we will be back to join you in conversation next Monday, the first Monday in March. Oh, my gosh, the year is just flying by.
I know.
So hopefully those of you, whether you're in Los Angeles or Portland, you're safe from the snow and all the other strange weather events we are experiencing.
Well, take KBOO with you to keep you entertained and informed. We'll hear you next week.
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
Goodbye.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public